This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.
Hi, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb and Aviation Consumer. If you've been following any of our coverage about electric aircraft and drones, you've probably noticed that the second or third sentence in every one of those reports introduces the idea that battery limitations continue to stunt growth. So today we're talking to Jeff Chamberlain, who heads the Argonne Collaborative Center for Energy Storage Science out in Illinois at the Argonne National Labs. And note that I said energy storage, not just batteries. So, Jeff, let's start talking about why batteries haven't reached the capacities that some manufacturers in the electric aircraft industry had expected.
Yeah, the bottom line is that it's a very difficult problem of physics and chemistry. We want to pack as much energy as humanly possible and allow ourselves to pull it in and out of that material on a regular basis. So the bottom line is we need to design a material and a battery pack that manages that material so that we can store a whole lot of energy. And that's just a very difficult problem of physics and chemistry.
And I think we in the press, I think, have picked up stories that said battery improvements are just around the corner. And so what we've seen is a 5 to 7% improvement in energy density every year or so, or every generation or so. Do you think that will continue? And if it doesn't continue, where do we reach the ceiling?
I think that the 7-ish percent improvement per year will absolutely continue. In lithium ion, we still can theoretically roughly double or quite possibly triple the overall energy density of lithium ion and have a concomitant decrease in cost of about 50 or 80% in the future. And that has a long pathway that's going to persist for quite a while. But you do hear in the media about all these breakthroughs, and that's a combination of snake oil salesmen by the entrepreneurs as well as salesmanship, as well as the media is complicit in this. Sometimes scientists publish a scientific result, and I've experienced this myself, and the media turns it into a catchy title that gets everyone's attention, and that causes a bit of overpromising.
Dave, where do you think the economic trends are going to go in terms of cost per watt hour or kilowatt hour?
In 2004, the costs were around $1,600 per kilowatt hour. 10 years later, and this is at the pack level, the battery pack level. 10 years later, we're down by end of 2014, we were down to about $350 or $400 per kilowatt hour. So that's a massive improvement in one decade. We believe that you can get down to, with manufacturing process improvements and materials level innovations, we can get down to somewhere between $125 and $150 per kilowatt hour. And parity with a barrel of oil cost of about $30 a barrel, parity would be about $100 per kilowatt hour when you want to look at vehicles on the road. I don't know so much about aviation, but in terms of vehicles on the road, we would achieve a parity at about $100 per kilowatt hour.
And is that doable, do you think? Do you think that'll happen?
It is. I've seen projections by our peers out at Tesla of less than $100 per kilowatt hour for lithium ion. Our models are maybe a little bit more conservative, so we believe we can maximize the performance and cost of lithium ion at about $125 a kilowatt hour. But I would say if you average our estimates, then we do have hope that we'll achieve that parity level. But there is a very complex kind of global geopolitical question you're asking, because we don't know what the cost of a barrel of oil will be 10 years from now.
When you look at safety of these systems, it's a real concern for aviation, obviously, because we're flying with these airplanes and there's a concern about thermal runaway. Is the technology improving to reduce that risk?
Yes, I think for us, safety is paramount. A lot of the work we do is kind of hinges around not only how much energy you can store, but how much energy you can store and remove safely. So we look at it from the material scientist perspective at Argonne National Laboratory of finding the materials that are safer. And let me give you an example of what I mean by that. There are side reactions that occur in the battery between the liquid electrolyte and the active materials in the cathode and anode. If you can design an electrolyte system that's a formulation, almost like you would formulate paint for your house, we can actually put all kinds of additives inside that electrolyte that are fire suppressing, so that if and when side reactions occur, they're actually self-limiting. And it's not just at Argonne National Laboratory. There are places all around the country that are looking at those kinds of solutions. But out in industry, what we see, and in some of our academic friends' houses where they do a lot of engineering, there's also coupling that with new battery management systems that will prevent the kind of thermal runaway that's happening. And vehicle makers, GM, BMW, Tesla have done a really good job of designing systems that make the batteries much safer. So it's the combination of the material science that make the materials safer, the engineering and design that make the management of the system safer. That's we've had seen massive improvements in the last decade in those areas.
Last question we'll ask you about two technologies we've been reading about. We've been reading about lithium air, which supposedly has terrific energy density, and maybe lithium sulfur as a chemistry that might hold promise. I think Airbus is interested in it. What's your view on the industrialization of those chemistries?
Our research portfolio, our portfolio at Argonne National Laboratory, does have lithium sulfur and lithium oxygen or lithium air in it, but it's a very small piece of the pie of our portfolio, particularly lithium oxygen. I would say from a commercial perspective, even though there's great discoveries around the world from Argonne National Laboratory to Cambridge and elsewhere, there's great discoveries going on in lithium oxygen. We're still a minimum of a decade away from a viable prototype, let alone commercialization, which might be 20 years away. Lithium sulfur, it's a similar... I think we're further along in lithium sulfur. We as a field are further along on lithium sulfur, but we're still a good 5 to 10 years away from a viable prototype. This is my opinion, 5 to 10 years away from a viable prototype of lithium sulfur, and another 5 to 10 years after that for viable commercial. And what I mean specifically is reversible batteries where you can charge and discharge them, what they call secondary batteries. There are primary batteries for lithium oxygen that are out there, but they're once use and then you throw them away.
So the bottom line for aviation interests is here, if we expect higher capacity batteries, we're going to need to be patient.
Yes, but maybe not quite as patient as you think, because I often get asked the question, what comes after lithium ion? And the answer to that is lithium ion. And I'm not being facetious that we are changing the chemistry inside of lithium ion cells in order to enable us to get to 2 to 3 times the energy density while we're working on, the brass ring of lithium sulfur and lithium oxygen. So from what I see from our friends at Embry-Riddle and elsewhere, that even with lithium ion, electric and hybrid electric flight is not more than 5 or 10 years away.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the education, Jeff. We appreciate it.
Sure thing, Paul.
This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb and Aviation Consumer. Thanks for listening.
This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.